This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
Oh, sometimes I get a good feeling, yeah.
Yeah, I get a feeling that I never, 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 never had before.
You're the girl with the deaf family?
Yeah.
I just want to tell you right now.
And you sing. Interesting.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvin. The SAG Awards just passed. We're ramping up in our headlong ride towards the Academy Awards this year. So this week, we're actually going to be reviewing a pair of films that have been pretty heavily nominated. And we're starting off with Coda.
So I know when we say Oscar-nominated film, there's a sort of veneer or a vibe that people think, right? And the best way to watch Coda is to throw all of that out the window, because this is the kind of Oscar-nominated movie that I've sorely missed. We used to get movies like this, I think, back in the 90s and early 2000s, where it's just a good story that is acted well and told well and takes on an important issue, but without necessarily having to do like filmic gymnastics or to be atas. And I'm glad that this movie exists, and I really loved the movie and the experience of watching the movie.
Oh, I think I love the movie for all the same reasons that you just said. What I love most is that the movie could have gone two ways, but then it didn't do either of those ways. It could have been Oscar bait, like you said. It could have used disability as a way to tell like a sad or moody story, something very dark, something very depressing. Just, you know, like manipulate the heartstrings a bit to get people like, you know, the tearjerker kind of films. Or it could have been a Disney movie, because this movie like basically uses the Hallmark afternoon movie template. Like it has like beat for beat, scene for scene, character for character, and it uses that blueprint to tell its story. But it somehow floats in a very unique space between being predictable and heartwarming and charming and romantic and tense. And I think the result is a movie that's like highly enjoyable and highly watchable, and doesn't use disability as a quote unquote gimmick to sell you what it's telling you or to make you watch the movie.
The best way for me to sum up the movie, I think, is to start with the title, because Coda, of course, is a reference to a child of deaf adults. So in other words, someone who is born to people who have a hearing disability. But Coda, of course, also makes a reference to music. And fundamentally, Coda tells the story of Ruby Rossi, who is the only hearing member of her family, and her desire to find her own path and to find her own way through life through music, but also her strong attachments and bonds to her parents and her brother. And that's more or less what you need to know. They are also a fishing family. That's very important. It takes place in Gloucester, Massachusetts in the United States. And that I think just the contrast between the fishing story and the music story and the school story, I think all three of those settings are almost equally important.
Yes, and I'm glad you actually brought all that up, right? Because it's a fairly simple, straightforward story in one way. Essentially, it's a story of a teenager learning to find themselves amidst the kind of baggage and dynamics that their family has. One that's, I think, universal in many, many ways. But then all of those things that you just mentioned, right? The struggle of being from a community of a family of deaf people, in a community of hearing people, the struggle of being from this segment of society, the fisherman family, you know, in a town where those kinds of jobs are struggling, the money is not very high, all of those things. And then on top of it, the teenage relationship aspect, right? There's so much that the movie manages to pack in within that relatively simple frame. So the negative comments I've heard about the film often revolve around the fact that it's formulaic, that it doesn't really surprise you. And you kind of know what the emotional beats are going to be or where it's going to end up. But I think the absolute best thing about the film is that that doesn't matter, because it does all of those things so, so well, that even if you know how it might end up, the journey getting there is so beautiful and so immersive.
I mean, it's so formulaic. At the same time, it doesn't look special at all. Like nothing about the cinematography, the way it's shot, the scenes, none of it stands out as something that you would call an award-winning film, quote unquote. And I think that if you remove the element of deafness from the movie, from the story completely, you can still tell a compelling story with these characters. Swap it for maybe, I don't know, like other family dramas, or other family issues, some other kind of trope, and you'll get the same kind of conflict, you'll get the same kind of issues, the same kind of dilemmas. And that's what I love. Like the quality of the story isn't dependent on the three members of that family being deaf at all. Because the problems are, like you said, it's based on family, it's based on being young, being a teenager, stuff like responsibility towards your family or towards your loved ones, big decisions that come at that age, right, at that brink of like leaving school and going to college. So I think that's what separates it from being like a schlocky TV movie that's just playing to your feelings. There's so much thought. There's honestly so much thought put into this movie that looks on the surface very superficial.
So I really enjoyed this film. I enjoyed this film actually unreservedly, although the reservations that I have read in other reviews, I can also see and agree with, which I think we can get to later. But in terms of my own feeling, I think it's, you know, sort of Lady Bird-esque, sort of Juno-esque in that it is that coming of age story of a girl at a very particular cusp, right? You know, the moment where you are just kind of yearning for independence, but in this case, being held back in a very particular way and for very particular reasons. And I love that the characters are so well realized. I think that that really is the main thing that drives the story. It's the fact that these are characters where she's a teenager. She's a good person, but she's a teenager and she's going to want to make some of those decisions for herself. Similarly, her parents and her brother are all, you know, individually, they have their own motivations. None of them are perfect. You know, I particularly enjoyed her relationship with her mum and dad because each relationship is very finely formed and also specific, right? In terms of why they both want her to stay or how neither of them can truly grasp exactly what she finds so fascinating about music. And that's partly because they are deaf, but also partly because they just, I think they didn't view her the way she's been seeing herself.
So, Arvind, you said the movie could be swapped out for any other sort of issue. And I completely agree. I know what you're saying. But on the other hand, though, I loved how the film takes this notion of people being deaf, families made up of deaf people, and then sort of infuses the whole story with it, even the contrast between music and silence. You know, the fact that they give so much attention and respect to sign language and signing, and in fact, the individuality of signing. So I think that the deafness is important to the storyline. It's intrinsic to the storyline, but not as every deaf person in this movie is defined by their deafness. And I think that's important. Instead, they're people, right? And I think it's very important to present them as individuals with flaws as well as strengths. And that's something this movie does so well. And we are going to talk about it later, but I think primarily through the fact that they decided very consciously to cast deaf actors. The movie is a remake of a French film, and that film actually did not use deaf actors. And I think it's significant because you do get to see how exactly what the differences are when you contrast the world of a person who can't hear with the world that we all take for granted.
there's so much attention to detail. I think that's like, that's one of the best things. It's not like making blanket statements. It's not seeing a group of people like as a stereotypical group of people that they know nothing about, right? So they are, it's a lot of like fine tuning, and it's a lot of characterization on a very personal level. I wanted to ask you guys, did you watch this with subtitles? Because by default, when I was watching it, they don't have subtitles for the movie. Like it isn't baked into the film itself. But when you turn on subtitles, then you get subtitles for everything. And I don't know if that was a choice that's made for streaming or if that's how the movie is shot. Is it supposed to be watched, like seen, if you don't know sign language, you don't know how to sign, then you're not going to understand the scenes where there's only sign language, or do you have to turn on subtitles to watch this?
So my understanding of this, which is not based on this film, but actually based on The Sound of Metal, in which they made a similar decision to not sub the ASL that was being used in the film. And the reason why was, I think fundamentally so that everybody could watch the same film, and also to not kind of other the signing, basically. So that's what it is, right? To not treat it necessarily like a different language. And from what I understand, this is one part of how movies that are about deaf people or that have deafness as one of the fundamental points within it. It's one of the things that they're doing. I do think it's really interesting. I did notice that they weren't hard-baked in, and I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting.
I don't think I realized that because my Apple TV, which is what I watched it on, I've set the subtitles to appear by default. So I started watching, the subtitles were there, and I just kind of took for granted that there were subs. And now I'm wondering what it would have been like to watch it without, and whether it would have changed how I relate to these characters.
I think part of it is also, I think, just having you reconsider the need to switch it on. Not reconsider, but to think more consciously about it. Because, of course, for people who are part of the deaf community, you know, without closed captioning, it's a completely different experience for them as well when they watch movies that are otherwise made for hearing folks. So I think it's one of those things that's been part of movies that center the deaf community. But yeah, that's an interesting point. We're talking today about Coda, which is written and directed by Sian Hedder. It stars Emilia Jones. It's got Troy Kotsur, Ferdia Walsh-Pilo, Marley Matlin, Daniel Durant. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the performances, because I think that we could spend the next 10 minutes basically focusing on that. Let us know, have you seen Coda? It's available on Apple TV. Did you like it? What'd you make of it? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Burning for more. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Like the sweet morning dew, I took one look at you, and it was plain to see you were my destiny.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvin, and together we are reviewing Coda. So we've talked quite a bit about the story. We've mentioned that we all basically enjoyed it a lot. I wanted to talk about the performances because the thing is that the film, I think, depending on where you are, depending on which characters you're with, the experience is actually completely different because the performances are completely different because you have Ruby kind of moving through the world as someone who can both sign, hear and speak. And then on the flip side, you have her family where when you're in the house with them, it's an entirely different experience. There are these intense and detailed conversations that are happening among the four of them. And yet all you hear is, I don't know, the sound of forks hitting plates or the sounds of somebody, you know, not realizing how much sound their phone is making, for instance.
So what I love about the movie is that it actually displays to us what acting is for an actor who is deaf. And it sounds simplistic, but I think that we could all do with a lot more exposure to stuff like that, right? I love the cast for this film. I love them so much. And even people who were given relatively stereotypical roles, I think just did so much with what they had. You mentioned the parents earlier, Lynn, and I have to say that they're hands down my favorite. Marley Matlin as the mom and Troy Kotsur as the dad. Kotsur has actually been nominated for a Best Supporting Actor. And I think Marley Matlin should have been nominated as well. They're so delightful. They are not deaf parents, their parents, and their parents who happen to be deaf. And I think that comes across in the way they perform, in the way they interact and react to Ruby and Leo, who's their son. I don't know. There's just something so natural about this film. And the performances and the actors are hands down one of the biggest reasons why this film works so well.
So I did. So I knew what this movie was about, but going in, I didn't want to do any reading or do any research about who was playing who, or whether they were actually deaf, or whether they were actors playing deaf characters. And I think, like, after watching it and reading about the kind of effort and the kind of choices that the filmmakers made to cast specific people for those roles is a huge deal. And that those are the tiny choices and the small things that I really love. The movie does so much in these tiny performances to explain who is what and why different people have different motivations. There's this one scene where, I won't spoil it, but someone asks Ruby how she spoke when she was a kid. And the way she explains it is so, so real. And not like dramatized and not made to be overly sentimental. It's so realistic that you appreciate all those tiny things that they did.
I really love the performances. And I love the performances partly because they are, there's something fundamentally different about an actor who isn't using the instrument of the voice, and where the voice is instead what's being expressed through their hands, through their faces, and the level of expressiveness, right, that emerges from the deaf characters played by deaf actors. It's entirely different than these same conversations being had by hearing people. There are arguments in which someone literally tries to just stop talking by turning away from someone else, you know, and the person who wants to keep talking has to actually hit the arm and go, hi, no, we're not done.
Or when they curse at each other in sign language with the expressions. The movie is incredibly funny. I don't think we've said.
It's very funny.
Yes, it is very funny. And so I think that the performances are all really what make the story for me. The tenderness with which the characters approach one another, with which they handle delicate things like, I mean, Arvin, you were talking about that conversation in which Ruby talks about what it was like for her growing up. But I think that there was also, you know, some realizations, like, was she ever allowed to be a child? What is it like for her brother to have a hearing sibling? What is it like for her to be the only hearing person in a family of deaf people? You know, there are all these things. And it's done, I think, without the ramping up of resentments and heading towards some sort of big crescendo that that I think another movie might have been tempted to do.
They also do these great scenes which revolve around that contrast between the hearing world and the deaf world. Again, I don't want to give up. I don't want to give out what happens, but there are a couple of scenes. One during a concert that Ruby performs in. Another that's a scene that everyone's talking about between her dad and her. Oh, such good scenes, so beautifully acted, and positions us actually in the place of being the other. Which I found really interesting, what it must feel like to be in a world where you can't easily access what's being expressed. And I think it's those kinds of clever touches where the performance then adds a layer of drawing us into the story that takes this movie from what we started with, right? You called it like a Hallmark template, all the way up to why I think it deserves to be an Oscar nominee level.
Also, it's so refreshing because I noticed that every location and every set piece used in this movie has been used by other movies to tell very different stories, and much darker stories. So you have like the small town, you have the fishing village, you have the bar with the bad dudes, you have the teacher who lives in the middle of some forest or in the woods somewhere, the isolated cliffs, the lake, and everything that they show in this film is usually reserved for stuff that's a bit more sinister, let's say, and themes that are not this theme. And I love that this movie is fun. You mentioned funny. It's so funny. So many scenes had me laughing a lot. It's so lighthearted. And a lot of it is actually very goofy. Like, a lot of the scenes aren't there to like hit you over the head with some message or to teach you a lesson. They're just there to be in a very fun, funny film. And I honestly really appreciated that. I'm still surprised at how this movie got nominated for so many awards, because normally the awards don't nominate movies that are that funny or that fun. But yeah, it's good.
It also makes the emotional moments that much more subtle and resonant, right? Like,
yes.
Because they decided not to hit you over the head with it. We haven't talked about the music. We've come this far and we haven't actually mentioned Mr. V or, you know, the entire subsection of the movie that isn't about fishing and isn't about family, but is instead about music. And the continued centering of Marvin Gaye and, you know, just these really great songs done in the setting of choir that isn't Glee. Like, I actually really enjoyed the way music was used in this movie, and I thought it was really clever.
So Mr. V could easily have been a caricature, right? The music teacher who's in a small town to inspire.
He almost was.
He gets there,
yeah. And then he pulls back.
And it's the pulling back that the movie does so well. But I love the music. I loved how, I think this was one of those cases where the music was such an important part of a movie, which ironically then also makes a point by the absence of that music. And again, a very clever touch.
I mean, the choice of song, the songs are so sweet and so iconic, and they're used to tell different stories at different points throughout the movie, which was something that I thought was really, really clever. I also wanted to ask you guys though, like, is this a cinema movie? Do you think this was something that you wanted to see on the big screen? Because for me, it's the perfect TV movie.
I feel like you and I always end up on the opposite side of this argument. For me, any good movie is a cinema movie. And this one I would have loved, I think primarily because of the intimacy and because of the music. I think it would have been really nice to see also this kind of performance on a large screen, but I very much enjoyed being able to cry on a couch and laugh and jump around in excitement at home.
Oh, I cried.
Yeah.
A bit.
Yeah, I cried quite a bit. I liked being able to be in a reclining position and not have to pay for said recline. So I do think that it works in that context. I totally hear what you're saying, but I'm also kind of glad that it didn't make it to a cinema here where it would have floundered. I don't see it doing well in cinemas.
That I agree.
Yeah, and for that reason, I'm happy that I got to loan an Arvin Wood to have a cozy experience at home watching Coda. We are talking today about Coda, which is available to watch on Apple TV. Have you seen it? Did you like it? WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.